The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for the 2014 version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a fun reboot of a much-loved cartoon or a Michael Bay movie? We watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2014 to see if it was redeemable. Were we successful? Find out after this theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast. This time looking at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2014. Yes, it's taken us to season 3 of the podcast to get to a Michael Bay movie. Yeah. Anyway, I am your host, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host...
Christian Fletcher. Thank you, Trevor. Actually, thank you for having me, but not thank you for having me for this particular movie. And maybe from now on we either refer to him as MB or that director. Maybe we should get that out of the way with now.
Did you detect my slight problem in saying that name, which I think Kevin Ross in the previous podcast as well.
Oh, definitely. And I actually watched the movie with somebody else, and about halfway through I turned to him and said... you can now see what I meant by we're watching a Michael Bay film, and he nodded and went, oh, now see what type of film we're watching. It all sort of sunk in, so that gives you a bit of an insight. But not giving too much away, like always, I was up for a challenge.
Indeed, I'm always up for a challenge. Even him challenge.
A him movie.
Yes.
And that's not a capital H or anything like that.
No, is it?
But yeah, so... I've managed to avoid this for so long, and having been, you know, quite a big fan of the 1990 live-action film, like, God, I saw that at the movies, and the sequel, and, the original I watched on video so many times, I've screened it so many times, even though I think a few months ago. So I'm coming at it from that sort of angle, and having sort of, when I knew that this remake or reboot was coming out in 2014... I avoided it like the plague, and then as soon as I started seeing posters, I avoided it even more. So that's sort of the angle I'm coming in at it with. And even though I did watch the cartoon as a kid, I don't remember the intricacies of the plot as much as I probably should in terms of, you know, what were their motivations and things like that. So there were a couple of things that they touched on in the movie that I assume was stemming a lot from that. But so that's where I'm kind of coming in from with this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of the cartoon back in the 90s, and I even had some of the original versions of the graphic novel, which was a lot darker and grittier than the cartoon series or even this movie. And I was also a big fan of those live action movies from the 90s as well, even though I didn't really get to number 3 until we did it last year,
yeah.
as another Redeeming Features cast, which I believe we redeemed Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 at that time. So we've got history with this franchise, Christian. You know, we've got a positive history with this franchise, and I think we should hold on to that very dearly.
I know, and that's why I'm pretty impressed to say that I can say I love the trilogy. So I'm holding on to those, I'm clasping onto those 3 movies as much as possible. So yeah, having to watch this kind of left a bit of a bad taste in my mouth, so, but we digress.
Absolutely. Well, remember, a movie can have problems but still be redeemable. It's happened before. But before we get on to that and into the details of our discussions, I think we should talk a bit of turkey trivia, and it certainly is quite an accurate title this time around. So first up, let's talk turkey, about the turkey. The IMDb rating is 5.9 out of 10. The movie had a budget of $125 million and it grossed about $485 million worldwide. So it didn't do all that badly, and I mean, from, I suppose, a redeeming feature standpoint, it was critically panned, and it has... there was a lot of bad press in the lead-up to the movie coming out, and of course it did not really get much critical acclaim or even good press once it was released. So it certainly is in the wheelhouse of the redeeming features, even though on those figures it appears to be considered an above-average movie that actually did all right at the box office.
And that's that's one thing I was discussing with my friend when we were watching it. Is we were like, who watches this? Why did they make this? And I said, yes, whilst it might be a pointless film, and I don't want to give away my feelings too early again. I said, this would have just been fed through mass marketing and fed to the young kids as this new hyped up thing to go and see. Like a lot of the new the Transformer movies and these other sort of Michael Bay abominations, I don't know if that's the word, that keep coming out. And, it's almost going to be a guaranteed winner. And that's the sad part about cinema nowadays with a lot of things. So, it is unfortunate that those figures speak otherwise to what its film, its quality actually is.
Yeah, again... Oh, so hard not to give the game away this early on, but we shall press on, and we'll talk a bit of trivia, and as I mentioned before, there was quite a bit of bad press prior to the movie even coming out, and two bits of the trivia do address that. Apparently, it was originally going to just be called Ninja Turtles, but the Teenage Mutant part was put in to please the fans, because they were quite negative in their feedback about that. In addition to that, an early screenplay had the Turtles as aliens from Dimension X. Shredder was to be an alien who grows spikes, and a breakout and escape of a mountainside foot base. That received huge backlash from fans and was discarded. However, there is a particular line that kind of pays tributes to that when asked if they were aliens, April O'Neil goes, "Aliens? No, that's stupid." It's a bit of a callback to the reaction that original script got.
So, well, it's interesting that you say that about the alien thing, because I was going into this movie, remembering someone saying to me, "Oh, they've changed it because the turtles are actually end up being aliens." So I must have been sort of getting the tail end of one of those rumors before the movie had come out. So it's interesting that they would have taken on board a lot of what possible test audiences or what audiences in general were sort of saying beforehand, or fans were saying beforehand, but they obviously didn't take on board a lot of stuff that they should have in order to please those fans.
I think these early things that people really railed against maybe stopped a lot of people from seeing the movie, and being that it was a Michael Bayimation, shall we call it that, they just didn't bother finding out if those things had been fixed. Like, another big surprise I got was the appearance of Whoopi Goldberg in the movie.
Yes.
Apparently she stated that this movie had been a lifelong goal of hers. And this is a quote: "My daughter was a huge fan of the original TMNT cartoon, so when the original movie was announced, she wanted me to be in it. And so I asked around, but it never happened. Same with the other films they made. So when I heard this new project get announced, I asked around again, and to my surprise, I got the part."
She definitely was an unexpected, cameo or part, I must admit. But I don't know if it was something, if it's about Whoopi Goldberg, but she just always really stands out. And she stood out to me as possibly the only one that was kind of not taking it too seriously and kind of was in on the joke and was having a bit of fun with it, whereas everyone else was just sort of like, this is so realistic and so normal. And I don't know, it seemed like she was sort of having a bit of a wink at the audience. But I don't know if that was also just Whoopi Goldberg herself. She has that kind of character about her.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, she definitely added a bit of class to proceedings. I don't think she was the only one having fun with it, but we'll get to that in a bit. Yeah, so another bit of trivia is, again, just referring to things that happened in the movie that we'll get onto, of course, but Michelangelo states that the Turtles needed Raphael for the Christmas hip-hop CD, which is an actual reference to a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles special from 1994 We Wish You a Turtle Christmas. And I have looked this up. It does exist, and it is as terrible as it sounds.
Oh, my God. Well, I thought it was bad enough when they were doing the rap in the elevator. God, that scene got a big, like, question mark next to it. But, yes, we we move on.
and there's the other thing, too, is that there is a very uncomfortable opinion of Michelangelo as to his relationship with April O'Neil throughout the movie. And at the end, as they're driving off, he's singing Happy Together to her by the Turtles. It's not actually a happy love song. It's actually about a guy trying to convince himself that his girl hasn't dumped him. So, I could understand the point of that, but they kind of missed the point of the song.
They're like, let's use a turtle song. What's the most popular hit of theirs? But yeah, no, that was quite strange. But you know, as I said, I'm kind of coming in. Now, can I get the clarification? The one with the goggles, is that Michelangelo, Donatello? I get them mixed up.
Donatello was the goggles.
Okay, cool. Which was the whole time was like question mark. But yeah, my memory, I say I was a big fan, but my memory of the colours has kind of changed a bit. But I was always a Raphael fan, and he was always the one that sort of stood out. I was trying to sort of, not rebel, but yeah, sort of go out against the group or go away from the group. So they were kind of doing a lot of that stuff. And as I said, I'm coming into this film from the 1990 angle, you know, because that's the one that I kind of lived and breathed for so long. And I did see so much of the plot elements of that following out, you know, where they kidnap Splinter and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if after they were sort of getting this feedback from fans that were giving it backlash, that they've gone back and gone, well, let's follow the plot of something that's a bit more realistic or better, that they enjoy.
Yeah, I have a few theories about that, and we'll certainly get onto that. But, you know, Christian, we need to set a baseline.
Exactly.
So, we need to set something to work from. So, I've gone to Amazon, because that's, as always, is the easiest place to browse a whole pile of reviews. And I thought this one was a good starting point. The title of this review is, I Hated This Movie.
Oh, well, that's pretty much all you need to say. Oh, God, are you sure I didn't write this one? But anyway, oops, giving too much
more,
away.
There's more.
Continue.
There's more. I hated this movie. It doesn't follow the storyline or really do the franchise any justice. It was beyond stupid, and I forced myself to finish it because I paid to download it. I don't normally give movies so low a rating, but this was really, really disappointing. I felt like they forced Raph to be angry. It didn't come natural in the script, at least in my opinion. Splinter was their worldly sensei, and yes, father figure, but not what I felt. He was mean and abusive, which was not good in this movie. There was no real emotion. I mean, one of them gets hurt, possibly dies, and it is a huge joke. Disappointed. I so wanted to like this movie. 1 star.
Oh, God, there's so many things that he said that I can relate to. Can't remember what one particular one was, but, yeah, it stood out exactly to me. And yeah, pointless. But, yeah, I can relate. So, yeah, as you said, Trevor, can only really go up or down from there with the 1-star review.
Indeed. Well, again, as is my wont, I've got to say, Christian, at least it was less than 2 hours.
I know. Oh my God, the voice of you saying that just echoes in my head all the time. So just be careful what you wish for, though.
Oh no. Mind you, what it actually felt like whilst watching it is a different story, but the actual physical runtime was less than 2 hours. And as the movie started, I felt a thought, because like you, I actually avoided this movie with a passion. And like I said, I only chose it this time around because the sequel is currently in the cinemas and it makes it kind of relevant to do it now. But as I pressed play, as it started, it was like, oh gods, I'm actually doing this. What am I doing? Do I need to question my life choices? You know, that was kind of my very first thought.
Well, I was lucky enough to, as I said, rope somebody in to watch it with me. But I think within probably like 5 or 10 minutes, he was on his phone. And you know what? I think I paused it a couple of times, then actually turned to him and said, can we swap places? Can I look at my phone and you watch this? But I knew it had to happen. And yeah, I've got written down here, I could feel my childhood being killed off frame by frame, you know, based on my experiences with Ninja Turtles. So I really should have kept that from my redeeming features section. But yeah, that's what I was feeling from the onset. So having to do this and press play was a big thing for me. So, but we continue, Trev. There's I'm sure there's many points we can pinpoint out, I'm sure. Or point out, sorry.
Yeah. Well, even though the opening was all just pure expositional dialogue, you know, where they just basically say, here's a whole chunk of story we can't be bothered to actually put effort into showing you. So let's just explain it by a voiceover. But I did like the graphic novel style of that opening.
Yeah.
It was very stylistic. Yeah,
and it was real action-packed, and it actually drew me in because it was almost like there was that fast-paced music, even from the Paramount Pictures or whatever the film company was that it opens with. Even from the opening credit from the opening logo right and through to that, was this really action-packed music, and I was thinking, wow, this is going to be a jam-packed kind of movie, and that real comic book style. And it almost, once you got into the movie and started to realise what it was like, you almost pined for that graphic novel style. You almost wish it had been done even in that style, possibly. It might have been somewhat more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. There was a bit, though, where they were actually doing a thing of the sword cutting through fruit. And I'm thinking, were they actually trying to emulate Fruit Ninja? Was Fruit Ninja, or Fruit Ninja would have been around when this movie came out? But then, yeah, so you got, that was a rather bizarre section that they threw in there, I think, just to get that, I reckon that looks very familiar. Ooh, the turtle must like Fruit Ninja. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, do you know how I was saying earlier about how it's kind of appealing to that sort of, I don't know, 18 to 25 audience, that younger sort of crowd that are, like, going out to the movies in groups or with their friends, and that's what obviously would have given them that huge box office that they received. But I think the fact that, they're all going, it tried to include all these witty one-liners from the Turtles and little references like that that they could all kind of have a giggle at. And it was like they were just throwing in as many as they could, and a lot of them quite try hard, but yeah. And then, you know, quite the overtly obvious to us, like the Turtles Happy Together reference, you know.
I did also like that, like, when you're talking about a reference towards the end of that graphic novel sequence, there was the Turtles coming down in order into the sewer entrance. That was just, like, 100% just lifted straight from the opening of the old cartoon. And that was a nice touch. I went, okay.
Yeah.
It looks like they are having some reverence to what has come before. And then the movie itself started, and the dialogue was not good.
Oh, yeah. And it seemed to be, even though the dialogue was bad from the Turtles, the dialogue from the humans was just as bad. Like, the female lead, is it Megan Fox? No.
Yeah, Megan Fox playing Fox. April O'Neil.
Yeah, that's how much I know about these sort of movies. I don't even know who they are. But it just felt like, I don't know if the funniest part about having Will Arnett amongst that cast, it just seemed, he was a bit like Whoopi, stood out so much to me. And trying to have him sort of as a romantic male lead sort of did not work at all. And his dialogue, you know, there were all these references to froth and all this sort of strange stuff. And it just felt incredibly awkward.
Megan Fox, April O'Neil, had, I think, the worst dialogue in the movie for a lot of it. And she was playing it seriously. But Will Arnett, I think he knew his dialogue was dodgy. And he was, like, he seemed to still have some personality behind it, so I actually did warm to his character after a little bit. In that it wasn't so much a romantic lead, more like, you know, he had an unrequited crush on April. But I felt he did seem to just basically go with his lines and have fun with it, whereas I think Megan Fox was a study in trying to do exactly what she was told, and it didn't come across naturally at all.
But, like, I do admit in some sort of parts she did give, I don't know if it's the right word, if sass is the right word, but she did give April O'Neil a bit of sass. Like, I did like how the character was played sort of with the, you know, in the cartoon, how she sort of wears the, yellow jumpsuit. In this, she sort of wears, you know, how she's got sort of the black miniskirt and the, as I say, the yellow sort of coat. That's sort of, I like that kind of, that looked worked, and it was, she played sort of some parts of it quite sassy, but I pine so much for Judith Hogg, or, you know, from the 1990 film, or, you know, I would have liked the character to have been played in somewhat of a different way, but there were elements of it that it did work with her playing it, but she was almost too obvious a choice, especially being the type of film that it was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there were times, I think, when she didn't have to have a big line to say, where she could just basically, I suppose, use her natural charms, I guess, a little bit more. But the more dialogue she said, the more I just thought that she really is not a very good actor.
Because I think she's known from doing pretty much Michael Bay stuff, isn't it? Because Transformers is Michael Bay. God, this is how much I know.
Yeah, she has appeared in a number of MB productions.
So he's obviously found... Oh, yeah, sorry, I mentioned the name. We might have to beep it out. So she's obviously... He seems to be a go-to and possibly a box office... possible box office success for him, so he's kept using her. But yeah, that is quite strange. But maybe they just put her in as much action as possible and give her as least lines as possible. That seems to be the way to go.
Quite possibly. And when you put her up against people like Will Arnett and Whoopi Goldberg, yeah, there is quite a visible divide with regards to performance levels.
Now the main this is how much it sort of half this movie went over my head. Now Mr. Sachs. Now this is the character of Mr. Sachs. Is he the guy that ends up holding the press conference? You know, is that the other sort of villain of guy? No, the not villain. You know the guy I mean, the other main guy in the movie. Is that Mr. Sachs? This is how much it's all blended into one another with me.
Eric Sachs, played by William Fichtner, when I first see him, I always think, Is that Christopher Walken? Because they've got a very similar look, but yeah, William Fichtner.
He annoys me, I don't know. But he definitely played that, he definitely seemed to suit that part quite well, and I assume he's a character that's used a lot in the original cartoon?
I can't really recall Eric Sachs all that much. I mean, he came in here, that character was the lab partner of April O'Neil's father, because they did mess with the origin quite a bit. They didn't go with the joke spin-off from Daredevil, which was the original Turtle origin story, where the toxic waste that blinded Daredevil got spilled down the sewers onto some turtles and a rat, where the turtles had been dropped by a young boy who was nearby when the accident happened and dropped his freshly purchased turtles.
Yeah,
into the sewer.
That's right.
And I assume the rat was about to eat them, and then they got covered with goo. So instead, we'll cover over the creation of the turtles. So April O'Neil's father and Eric Sachs are working together to create this mutagen that is apparently this wondrous, wondrous thing, and they're testing it on these little animals. And April O'Neil, she views some video from the time, and she basically thought of them as her pets, which made me wonder why it was she had no recollection of being in that lab and having them as pets until she watched the video, and then had to be told that she was the one who rescued them from the fire her father deliberately set to stop Eric Sachs.
I know. My jaw was on the ground. I turned to my friend and said, "Oh my god, wouldn't she? She just had this big scene with the four turtles in the subway or whatever it was, where she'd had this thing. Wouldn't she have made? Wouldn't the penny have dropped possibly between then and when she looked at the video? I couldn't believe it.
Oh, that's not even. Oh, we'll get more into that later. But yeah. That was my first. What?
I know.
I could handle this other stuff. And it's just like, okay, I'm just going to go for the ride with this. And then that happened. And I was just like, are you serious?
I did think it was interesting that her first encounter with the turtles was actually in the subway. Another reference to the 1990 film, which is, I think, where the first time I think Raphael comes out and attacks the Foot Clan that are trying to kidnap her or steal her bag or something. And yeah, so another thing that kind of was like stuck out to me is, oh my god, this is another ripoff of that film. But anyway, I've got to stop comparing them.
Yeah, I think, yeah, they definitely took inspiration from what came earlier and I suppose tried to make it bigger. So in this one, the Foot Clan, who aren't so much ninjas, they're more like a paramilitary group, and they're evil just because they're evil. Like, there's not much is given beyond that as motivation. You find out a bit more later as to what their big plan is, which, yeah. But yeah, they're being stopped by these mysterious vigilantes, so they capture a whole pile of people on the subway, and of course April, who wants to be taken seriously as a reporter and not just do fluffy froth pieces, as per that Will Arnett speech you mentioned earlier, of course she goes to investigate and promptly gets captured by the Foot Clan.
And it's like, I think, only sort of from there and... Yeah. From there and sort of a little bit after, we're only ever really seeing glimpses of the turtles, because, of course, the whole time I'm watching it, pretty much from the very start, I'm like, what are these turtles going to look like? I hadn't really seen a full look of them, even in sort of trailers or the lead up to it. So I was sort of waiting to see, and I thought, oh, maybe they're going to do the whole horror movie cliche, which is, oh, you don't show the monster much at all, or they're only going to show little bits of it and at the end do a big reveal. But, of course, we do eventually see the turtles.
Indeed we do, and they're beefy.
They're scary looking.
Solid, solid, very big turtles. I did kind of like the bit where she's up on the roof with them after spotting them, and sort of like seeing them more, and then Michelangelo comes over and sees her looking scared and reaches up and goes, it's okay, it's just a mask. He takes off his bandana. Okay, that was genuinely amusing. That was amusing. That was good. That was probably one of the very few laughs I got out of this entire adventure.
Yeah, and it seems like they always wanted to throw in all these sort of one-liners, and only very few of them were very witty, but yeah, they were, the dialogue, and even the voices of the turtles were quite hard for me to get used to. I think I was just so stuck on the original, but they were almost, you know, if you were supposed to look at them as our heroes in a way, which I suppose they are, they were quite frightening. It was always almost hard to root for them, because they were so terrifying and bulky.
But, like, leading on from that, so she gets a photo of them, she faints after being confronted by these giant turtles, and she can't remember ever having turtles as pets, because, you know, that would be ridiculous. Convenient. but then as they're like running away over the rooftops, she snaps another photo, which we later see is quite clear. And she's trying to convince her newspaper editor, or her the boss of Channel 6 News, being Whoopi Goldberg, about these turtle vigilantes, and she shows them everything she's got except for this one clear photo she has taken on her phone. It's like she has like these gaps where it's like, this is important, don't remember it until later when it's no longer useful to you.
It's like every time that they do something that's sort of, you know, we think to ourselves, that's so obvious. They're like, oh, this is extending the movie even more. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a movie. We wouldn't have our hour and 40 minutes. But, I don't know, the whole time I am still, you know, shaking my head going, why are they bothering doing this? What is the point of all of this? And then I think, pretty much, obviously, I know we've got the CGI, I suppose. Is that the right word to use? The CGI turtles.
CGI turtles, yes.
Yeah, that we've got. And then the fact that we've also got a CGI then Shredder, who also comes into the picture as well. And I don't know if it's also me. Like, Trevor, you'd probably have a lot more... You'd have a lot more to do with CGI movies than I would, having kids and seeing a lot more of those type of films. But for me, after watching it for not too long, it all sort of blends into one another for me. And I found that incredibly hard, considering the villains and our supposed heroes, the turtles, pretty much end up dominating the entire third half of the movie with their fighting. And I just found that it became incredibly hard for me to concentrate or look at.
Definitely not just you, Christian, and that is that's a common complaint with a lot of his movies. I did see the first Transformers, for example, and you had no idea of which bot was fighting which spot. It was just like a mess of CGI. And they did use a lot of slow-mo, I think, in this to try to alleviate that, just to remind people who was doing what and where. But even that, yeah, the CGI, especially towards the end where it's all Turtles and all Shredder, it just got messy.
I don't know. Yeah, you wanted the movie to end, and you started to forget that you're watching a live-action film. You were just suddenly put into a Pixar movie or whatever the name is. So, it was quite strange and hard for me to relate. But as you said, it sounds like an MB trait as a director. But it looks good at the box office and puts bums on seats with the young ones. But I just found that distanced myself so much from it.
Yeah, and I know we're jumping around a bit, but frankly, the movie does too, so I think that's perfectly justifiable. Another thing I noticed was that they really used Splinter almost a crutch to advance the plot. Like, he seriously knows everything that's going on. They don't keep up the fact that Eric Sachs is a bad guy. That's not that doesn't remain a mystery for very, very long. And of course, we find out just after April goes to see him for help about the turtles and the fact that they came from his lab. Splinter just knows everything. He knows absolutely everything that's happening in great detail. And explains it very thoroughly. So it makes you wonder why they have any trouble dealing with anything, because with that much knowledge, they should be able to make up a pretty good plan to deal with almost anything.
Well, I know, in the original movie, Splinter was, such a wise chap, or a wise rat. So he was always that kind of character. But yeah, in this one, he seemed to know everything. And he seemed to have a very, quite a talent with that tail, I noticed, too.
Especially since he learnt martial arts entirely from a book of martial arts, which I'm pretty sure didn't include tail moves.
Yeah, I know. Completely self-taught in that respect.
Yeah, and became an absolute master of martial arts, and then could go on to teach the Turtles 4 different fighting techniques due to the fact that they all, of course, use different weapons, and they're trademark weapons, so... That's pretty good for a rat with a book.
Yeah, exactly. God, so we shouldn't underestimate our rodents, should we? So, but we mentioned, I don't know if it's my dirty mind, but we mentioned Eric Sachs, but there were so many times where there were just things, the turtle's alive, we better go and find Sachs, and there's so many times, and I thought, the name was probably not the best one to use, but that was probably just my dirty imagination.
Well, I don't think it was, because there was more than one butt joke at April O'Neil's expense, we'll get to it, but there was also quite a, shall we say, a lowbrow gag in the closing credits, but we're not to that point yet, so I'll save that for later.
Yes.
But then, we said that Splinter pretty much knows that everything is that's going on.
Yeah,
but after the baddies find out that the turtles are alive and decide to come after them, they find them very, very easily in the sewers. And, without even being told, Splinter and the turtles know that they're using tranquilizer darts. Then we've got the scene where Shredder is just taking Splinter to pieces and subduing him quite easily. And I thought, well, hang on, the mutagen that they're so desperate to get from these turtles is also inside Splinter. So if you're going to subdue Splinter, why not just run away with him? Because, you're having so much trouble getting these turtles down.
Yeah.
But no, he insists on trying to make an example of Splinter. And I figure that the fact that April, who, again, knew all about... He was there for the fire... Knew her father lit it. Obviously, she should have known that something was wrong. She looks very upset when Splinter is lying there, apparently dead or almost dead. And I felt just like saying, yes, April, you not remembering anything means that this is all your fault and you should be ashamed of yourself.
Exactly. Oh no, that is a way to look at it for sure.
Oh boy. And, and just to show that the bad dialogue wasn't just confined to Megan Fox, once the three of the turtles are caught, because they think that Raphael has been buried under rubble or something, and they get taken off and put in these cases, Eric Tex comes out, and he just goes, "We'll drain every last ounce of blood, even if it kills them!" Really? Really? That was necessary to add to the end of that line? What? He wrote this? Oh my god!
Oh, I know. So, yeah, here was me thinking that most of the bad lines were just Will Arnett, but yeah, it seemed like they were coming from other people as well. I'd forgotten about that corker.
Yeah, but mind you, Will Arnett, I think, actually had the line that summed up the entire reason the movie got made shortly after he got introduced to Raphael, and he's basically going, "So, it's a talking turtle in a trench coat. Why not?"
Yeah, and that's the thing, he seemed, like him and Whoopi, they both seemed like they were so in on it and going, "Let's just have bloody fun with this." Whereas you've got Megan Fox over in the corner trying to overact herself to pieces, while all these, probably admittedly doing most of, probably 90% of her scenes in front of a green screen with no other actor. So it was quite it was quite an interesting mix all overall.
Yep. Yeah, but I think after that happened, of course, they head to the bad guy's house, which is the base of operations. Hey, let's have our evil lair at our house, because that makes sense.
Yeah, there won't be a fire.
And they find out about the big reveal about what they got planned. They're going to poison New York, kill nearly everyone, and then use the mutagen to cure people, even though the only thing I know about the mutagen is the fact that it mutated these lab animals into these sentient fighting machines, but they're still certain that it's going to do what they wanted it to do so that they can then sell it to all the nations of the world at a huge profit. And they get there, it's going to be in this big Saks building in New York, and the turtles have a plan to get to the elevator. And they're confronted by a room full of foot soldiers, and they turn around, and this exact line is said. Well, so much for the elevator. There's a quick cut scene to Megan Fox and Will Arnett trying to sneak up on Eric Sachs, and then it goes back to the turtles, and they're in the goddamn elevator.
I don't... Ah! Oh my god, all this frustrating, like, I was going to say setups or scene pieces, but or set pieces, and it's just like... ridiculous. They're all like always trying to flesh out a movie or just making all these wrong decisions and just feeling like they just have to see them out rather than they really should have just belonged on the cutting room floor. So I don't really know what that
I have
throughout a lot of this.
I have a few theories and we'll get to those. I think you could do an entire podcast just on the inconsistencies in this movie. So they then cut back to April and Will Arnett. I can't even remember his character's name, whatever. I'll just call him Will Arnett because, Will Arnett, the cameraman dude who seems to have a huge influence at Channel 6. They were there, they're trying to stop Eric Sachs from doing his thing with the mutagen, and he starts shooting at them, and he starts doing this big line about saying, "Yeah, you know what? When your dad found out what I was doing, I shot him too, but it didn't take as many bullets." But we know from earlier on, from the flashback, that her dad found out about what he was doing and then torched the lab. So if he was shot when he found out what the bad guy was doing, he couldn't have torched the lab, because I give up on this movie now. I just want it to end.
I know. You're not supposed to question that many things about it, Trevor, because, yeah, that's when you start to realise how ridiculous it is. And I'm thinking...
I can't help it.
But I'm also wondering if it's also, like, I don't know if I'm pigeonholing and saying that it is from a young, an 18 to 25, or, a young fan fanboy or fangirl sort of audience, but are they, you know, assuming that that's the mentality of those people going and seeing this movie? Are they thinking that they're that dumb and are going to fall for half of this stuff? It's ridiculous.
I don't know what they were thinking, because, yeah, after that, that's when we get to that, as you mentioned earlier, the absolute mess of CGI that is the entire climax of the movie, with and so much slow-mo within that dodgy CGI as well, just so we can get to what was almost like a carnival ride. And of course, you know, they knock Shredder off the top of a building, but you still get a shot of him in a crater in the ground, and you see his hand move just so they can do the "Oh, is he really dead?" moment, which lasts for like a fraction of a second, and then everyone's like as the turtles are coming down, and they're sort of like saying their last words to each other, just in case it all goes bad. It was just being laid on so thick.
Oh, I know.
Come on.
Oh, yeah, I just think they were either struggling with ideas or they just had too many ideas, they just wanted to throw them in. But yeah, just that CGI, just it ruined so much, and I don't know if it was a movie where it was a real turning point, or if it's a real standout, not standout, but one that stands out as being very over the top and really full on for CGI, and I'm sure it would have got criticism, and I think you did mention earlier it did.
Oh yeah, this movie was absolutely panned by the critics. There were not many good reviews of this when it came out.
I could imagine. I'm glad I'm not alone. I mean, whoops. I mean, yeah, anyway, continue. I'm running out of notes, pretty much, aside from things just going travesty, terrible, pointless. So, yeah. So, I don't know if you have much more to say about this awful thing.
well, really, I suppose, just to wrap things up, I mean, we mentioned before about having the whole Turtles song at the end, as they drive off in this weird turtle-mobile thing that just turns up from nowhere. You know, it was quite an advanced piece of kit for something that, you know, was put together by animals that live in a sewer. And then the closing credits hit, and I tell you what, that rap they had over the closing credits made me miss Vanilla Ice's Ninja Rap.
Oh, I know. But it's the first thing I thought of, too. Another thing, they're like, oh, we've got to do the rap soundtrack as well. But it was always almost this awkward segue from Happy Together into that. I almost wanted Happy Together to keep going. I felt at home, but it just went straight into this horrible rap. But then the last bit of credits was just a really slow little song. But, yeah, I wanted the Vanilla Ice back as well. Or even a soundtrack by Prince would have done, you know.
Yeah, and within that credit, a very, very quick little scene that I think really showed, I suppose, the level this was aimed at, is two of the turtles are swinging through the city and have to quickly hide, and so they hide on the cups of a Victoria's Secret bra billboard. So I was like, oh, nice. Just throwing a little boob gag.
Yeah, we'll see. We've got to appeal to it.
Because that's classy. Because, you know, the movie wasn't tacky enough. Yeah.
Yeah, if the movie wasn't tacky enough. Maybe they were just assuming the whole audience is there to pervert Megan Fox and nothing else or something like that. I don't know. So we might as well have them in a bra as well.
Pretty much. And I think we've probably said enough about our experience of watching this movie.
I think I have.
And so I don't know if there's going to be any surprises with the conclusions that may be drawn, given a lot of our conversations so far, but let's see how we go. So, Christian, I did pick this movie, so as per Redeeming Features cast protocol, you shall go first. Did you find this movie in any way redeemable?
Okay, Trevor, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2014. I went into this with an open mind. I kind of must admit I did go into it almost thinking, I'm going to hate this, you know, this is going to be the worst thing I've ever seen. And I came out of it thinking even worse of this. Trevor, this is definitely not redeemable any way, shape, or form. I have here in my notes, and I'm going to read them out, I felt like vomiting. Watching this hurt. It was a travesty. It was pointless. And one that I said earlier, and I think it sums up exactly my feelings about this movie, but it was like watching my childhood being killed off frame by frame. And, you know, not just in a comparison to the other movie, but just this mess of CGI that I was seeing before me. I feel sorry for the people that actually paid and went and saw this cinema and actually believed that this was quality cinema or a good movie, because this was just ridiculous. Probably the only thing I liked was the use of Happy Together in the movie. And you know what, Trevor? I may be thick, but it only took me until the podcast that I realised that turtles were the connection. I just liked the fact that Happy Together was in there. But yeah, that's probably the only thing I can say was good about it. So this movie is not redeemable. I think I'd rather watch Blood Rain a couple more times.
Ooh. Yeah, you got a point there. Especially Blood Rain 3 with that last line. I'll have to watch that as many times as ever. Just that last bit of Blood Rain 3.
Yep. Okay.
So, safe to say, not redeemable from Christian. Yeah. Well, look, it's not the worst movie we've watched for redeeming features. Not quite. Not quite. I'm pretty sure we've seen some worse movies than this. The plot was so messy and it contradicted itself on so many occasions. I actually get the feeling that it went through so many rewrites, even while filming, that they actually got confused about which version they were working on at which points in time. So we've ended up with this whole mishmash of conflicting plot points because by the time they got to the editing room, no one knew what the hell was going on with this movie, including the people that were making it. There was way too much happening in most of the CGI scenes, so it was good luck keeping track of who's who when that was happening. Megan Fox was, she brought the movie down even further. She was terrible. The turtles were annoying. And again, like, Splinter knew every last detail of what was going on, including major life events that April O'Neil could not remember. And I could not understand why they would ever get into trouble in that situation. I know you weren't too much of a fan, but I liked Will Arnett. He actually seemed to add some charm to this movie that it would have otherwise completely lacked. And you know what the biggest problem, though, Christian? I mean, this movie is completely despicable. There's no doubt about it. Now, the biggest problem that I had with this movie was that despite being a complete travesty, despite being probably the most awful thing ever done to the Ninja Turtles, mind you, I haven't seen the sequel. I have no plans of seeing the sequel, but let's face it, we'll probably have to do it as a redeeming feature one day.
Yes,
is that I could actually see this.
Sorry.
I could actually see the seeds of a movie that could have just been a stupidly fun movie. You know? Those sort of ones do exist. But what we got was just plain and simply dumb. It was a dumb movie full of dumb people, made by dumb people, and sorry if you liked it out there, but made for dumb people. This movie is not redeemable under any circumstances, and Christian, please forgive me. I chose poorly, and I subjected us to pure dumb.
That's okay, Trevor. I think just this once I'll let it go. I might have to make it up and get you back with another movie in the future.
Well, let's just say that, okay, it's pretty clear what our opinions of this movie is, but believe it or not, it has fans.
Oh, God, I suppose it always comes, doesn't it?
And there were a lot of 5-star reviews, or actually more 5-star reviews on Amazon than 1-star reviews, which makes me sad for the human race. But I found this nestled amongst it. The title of this review? Better than expected. What's not to like? Great action scenes, humour, sci-fi, edge-of-your-seat suspense, suitable for all audiences. Surprisingly well executed so as not to disappoint adult audiences, even though the plot is fanciful. 5 stars.
Oh my god. Well, every movie's got to have one, but you just wonder, have they watched a different movie? Or maybe they watched the 10-minute edit, where they cut out all the crap stuff.
I know you yearn for the fact that they've just written a review for the wrong movie, Christian, but frankly, this movie has people that like it. It's got 5.9 out of 10 on IMDb. It's got a large number of positive reviews on Amazon. Yeah.
Obviously didn't win us over. But it obviously did them well enough to, or get enough fans to warrant making a sequel. But I think, God, even just making $1 million nowadays seems to warrant a sequel.
Pretty much. And I'm going to try to say it again. Big breath. Michael Bay does seem to make mad bank on his movies. I don't know why. I don't understand it, but it happens.
He's managed to get a following with his name, and people seem to just flock to it. And he's just, it's become a brand that people are just almost brainwashed with.
He's almost like the successful version of Uwe Boll.
Yeah, but at least Uwe Boll had a little bit more creativity rather than just going down the mainstream CGI path.
Yeah. Sorry, I still can't put Uwe Boll and creativity in the same sentence.
Yeah, just, I know. You know what I mean, but you know what I'm comparing it to, so you've got to understand.
Fair enough. So I really think we should now just move on as quickly as possible and put Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2014 behind us and into that bin of irredeemable movies. Christian, it's your turn.
Okay.
What have you got in store for us?
Okay, well, this, you know, you realize this could have been a good chance for me to have gone, hey, he just made me watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, what could I do to take him back? But no, this is actually a movie that I had on my list for a couple of times ago, and it was actually the one probably that I was originally going to recommend in the place of She-Devil. And it was around the time when I was sort of getting a bit of pressure from my co-host about about the length of the films that we were choosing. So I kind of pushed this film aside. So I am kind of, I must admit, I probably think that the bad thing I'm saying is this film is on 2 hours. So I will apologise for that now. We're going into a different realm, or well, a realm that I always like to go. It's the movie musical, Trevor. We haven't had one for a while.
Ooh.
Okay, so this movie came out in 1979 and was released by Milos Forman. It was directed by Milos Forman, who'd just come out of doing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Now, what I'm interested to know, is this a really just a great movie musical, or is it a really bad adaptation that happened just about 10 years too late? We're looking at the 1979 hippie musical Hair. What do you think about that one, Trevor?
I'm looking forward to it. I've never actually seen the full movie of Hair. I'm a big fan of the music. So yeah, you know what? I'm going to give this a go. It's actually quite highly rated, too. It's 7.6 out of 10, Christian.
Yeah, well,
so, it's you picked a very interesting one.
Yeah, a lot of reviews say dull, badly adapted. And I, you know, was a fan of, of the stage show. And to see that Milos Forman completely changed the plot and threw it on its head for the movie kind of really upset me. But so, yeah, is it a misunderstood movie musical, or is it just a movie that really, by the late 70s, no one really cared about hippies? So, yeah, I'm really interested to see what your point of take is on it, Trevor, and to see whether it's redeemable, or if it actually is a bad movie. I'm interested to look back at it again with sort of critical eyes. So, yeah, and I do apologise that it is just on 2 hours, but that is my payback for Ninja Turtles.
That's fine. It's actually one I am looking forward to. So, I'm very happy to chat Hair for the next one. And may actually be able to talk some other people into watching this one with me, because I had no success with the one that shall not be named.
Good chance to hear the music again anyway. But yeah, whether it's, whether you can look at it as a whole package, as a movie musical, that's sort of what I want you to look at it, Trevor, and see if it's redeemable in that respect. So yeah, I look forward to taking a walk to, I was trying to think of some Hair pun and it wasn't working. So I look forward to chatting Hair.
Absolutely. And, of course, we would love to hear from anyone out there. Do you think we were too harsh on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Do you think it's even more of an atrocity than we do, and you think we were too generous? Do you have some redeeming or irredeeming features for Hair from 1979? Please let us know. You can get in touch with us via the Rufus Project homepage, rufusproject.com. We have our new email, podcast@rufusproject.com. You can find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook, and get in touch with us that way as well. Also, if you've got any suggestions, any requests, any challenges for movies that you would like to see if we can redeem, we would love to hear that too.
Well, I think it's been a pleasure, Trev, but even if the movie wasn't that great, it's always a pleasure to chat with you and try to redeem a movie.
Indeed, I was looking forward to our chat, even though it went pretty much exactly as I predicted, it was still fun. It's always good to get a bit of pure bile out of your system, and that's probably a good description of this movie as well. Pure bile.
Yes, exactly. That almost needs to be the subtitle, I think, of this particular redeeming feature cast, so maybe one to keep in the back of your mind.
I'll see what I can do. Okay, well, hopefully we'll have a much better chat next time with Hair.
So for sure.
Then, thank you, Christian, and chat to you next time.
Thank you, Trevor, and I should chat to you about Hair in a couple of weeks. Okay, speak to you then.
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
You better aim straight, you hit the center. In it to win it with a team of four Ninja Turtles.